Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 56 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella. And for the second episode, our still new producer, George Bissell. What's going on, guys? It's Thursday night. Jake Arrieta is pitching. Life is wonderful.
And we don't have him in any leagues, but it's Harvey Day, which, you know, as Mets fans, is still important, Brett.
Yes, very important.
I'm still recovering from the Joey Gallo debut. That was a bit much the last two nights.
Yeah, that is something. That is something that we probably will talk about.
It's a thing.
It's most definitely a thing. He's one of those players where daddy hits a home run, you immediately go online and try to find the video as quickly as possible, and it never disappoints.
I actually caught the second one live, which was pretty exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George Bissell is two S's and two L's. Rate and review us on iTunes. Email us flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. As always, we're going to kick off the show by talking about expert fab bidding. So, Mike, where do you want to start this week? Mixed or onlys?
Let's start in the mixed, and it kind of is a nice dovetail because it's a player we bid on, but there was a very aggressive big bid, and that was Ben Paulson. We bid $5 on Ben Paulson. We kind of talked about this. We're looking, I guess, for somebody better to cycle in on offense or to play matchups with as opposed to Aaron Hill, who has kind of morphed into a part-time player. And Brett Lowry, who he's had a couple little bursts, but he hasn't been very good. So we bid $5 on Ben Paulson. He's been doing very well. I actually saw him when I was at a CBP last Friday for that near no-hitter, which I won't get into my feelings on that. Ben Paulson, however, did not go for five. He went for $21 to Rudy Gamble of Razzball. And I kind of talked about this in the column, which went up at Baseball Prospectus on Tuesday. It's a very aggressive bid, but Rudy coming into the week had a lot of money. I think he had, I believe it was $88 left. Yeah, that's correct. And with that and his $10 bid on Justin Bour, who he also got, and a $1 bid for Tony Watson, he dropped all the way down to 56. So the bid's aggressive, but if you have the money at this point, you know, we're now in June and, you know, we're kind of at the one third, we're about at the one third mark of the season. Now's the time to drop that money if you haven't spent it.
Yeah, this is we're approaching use it or lose it time in mixed leagues, and clearly we like Paulson. We were the second highest bid for him, and I thought there was at least a reasonable chance that we could get him at five, but Rudy did outbid us, and each day I'm getting more and more optimistic about Paulson's outlook for the rest of the season. I think he'll find enough playing time, and I think he'll do enough with it. It's not a high end profile. I don't think he has quite as much power as he showed. But I think he's a good enough hitter with that park. It'll certainly play more than some of the back end guys that are owned in this league. Guys like Davis and Yonder Alonso. I'd rather take a little bit of a chance on Paulson with a little bit more upside than those guys especially in a mixed league where these guys are kind of boring.
There's a couple things. I mean, I agree with that, but for us to have spent, if we went 21 or 22 to spend more than half of our remaining budget on Paulson, I think that would have been a little much. And something I suggested in the column, and when we do our strategy sessions, we'll keep this in mind. I think the guys to look for are players playing in cores during the week who are free agents and who might get playing time, and guys who might get playing time in interleague play, you know, when a National League team is in particular is on the road.
Yeah, and I absolutely am not advocating for was not advocating for us to spend that much money on Paulson. It's just I would have liked him for five.
Yeah. Well, and I think the opportunities will come because teams are starting to spend their money, and we had the second highest bid. We had the only non-$1 bid. So it'll happen for us. I think we'll eventually get a couple players, like between, say, or somewhere in the $2 to $5 range, that we'll be able to kind of cycle in and out and play around with as the season goes along.
Yep.
Just really quickly, Mike, how do you decide when to make the big bid? You talked about, you know, getting to use it or lose it territory. How do you decide, which variables do you consider? Is it playing time or matchup based or need based? How do you decide which is the right kind of guy to sort of throw a big fab bid at if you're still holding on to a pile of money at this point and you're kind of looking at the pool kind of thinning out at this point in the season?
Well, that's an interesting question, George, because I usually look more at the dynamics of how much money I have left and the timing than the player. You know, and in mixed leagues in particular, the players, this is a 15-team mixed league labor, mm-hmm. that the players that are available often are still kind of like back end. You know, if they're not already on a reserve list or an active roster, you're not really going to have somebody kind of suddenly emerge and come out of nowhere. Now, the one thing about labor that's interesting is, unlike Tout Wars, where you can stash guys that are in the minors, you can't do that in labor. So the types of players I might be looking at are guys in the minors who might suddenly come up and have an opportunity. You know, I know Brett likes him, and I like him too. Like someone like Stephen Piscotty, if he gets called up,
yeah,
and we have an opportunity to bid on him, he's somebody, even though we only have $40 left, I might be fairly aggressive with and say, okay, the Cardinals are not calling him up to sit on the bench or be a part-timer. He's going to play. And I could see putting like a $15 to $20 bid on him, depending on the circumstances and time of year, just be like, all right, he's a guy I really want to own. He'd kind of round out our offense.
Absolutely. That sounds good.
Yeah. I think that's about as well or better than I could have said it myself. Are there any other names in mixed league that we should touch on? We'll touch on one of these names when we get to the AL only. But
so we can skip him. And you know, I mentioned Justin Bour. You know, he went for 10. You know, I know Brett, you don't like him quite as much as I do. I think that bid's fair. And again, it's a position that Gamble and Raz falls in where he has some holes in offense. He kind of needs to make the play. Even if we had been on board as a backup to Paulson, I probably just would have went like for $2 anyway, so it would have not mattered.
Yeah, what we were discussing would not have mattered.
Right. I think we can skip a lot of these guys just because they're sort of low-end bids. Something I'd like to look at one point later retrospectively is Fangraph's sleeper in the bus team. Their pitching has just really like fallen apart. And they've been putting a lot of kind of moderate low-end bids on guys. This week they picked up Erasmo Ramirez and Williams Perez at $5 a piece. I'd be really curious to go back and look to see how this strategy works, because I definitely like it better than plunking a ginormous bid on one player and seeing how it works out. But we'll have to see how it works. You know, we kind of found in labor last year, Brett, that if you're pitching tanks, it's just such an impossible hole to pull out of. And something interesting in labor mix I notice is the top five teams overall, the teams that are the top five in pitching. It's just such a – the two things tie together so much.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, once you start getting in that hole on the pitching side, it's very difficult to climb out of. And you know, especially in a 15 team mix where, you know, the guys that are available are not, you know, these are not players that are either locks to remain in a rotation or locks to remain successful. So you're
right.
You're dealing with this isn't like a 10 or 12 team league where you can go to the waiver wire and pick up someone who you know is going to be in the rotation for the rest of the year, barring injury, and it's probably going to be okay. And this is part of the reason why pitching gets devalued when the shallower you get. These are the pitchers that you end up dealing with. The starting pitchers that got taken this week for $5 or less were Perez, Ramirez, and Chad Bettis. That's what you're dealing with on the waiver wire in a 15 team mixed, and that is this is tough to find a really useful player in that group.
And the other thing is labor with six-man reserve lists. That's the other part of it. It's tough. A lot of the 12-team leagues like ESPN and Yahoo, Yahoo's a 14-team that I'm in, have three or say five-man reserve lists, but very also limited DL. Labor has unlimited DL, so does Tout Wars, and the six-man reserve. It makes it really challenging to find guys this time of year, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So shifting to the NL, unless George or Brett, you have anything else to add?
No, we're good.
So the NL was really quiet, and I'm attempting to finish a freestyle about Vickery Bidding, and I'm going to kind of talk about the dynamics. And if you're listening to this, and if I finish the article, you'll be reading this tomorrow or later when the podcast drops. Towers NL has been really quiet this year in terms of bids. And, a lot of that just kind of there's two factors. One, the quality of players that have come up haven't really been that good. The first week of the season, I was looking back and laughing at this. The three big pitcher bids were on Archie Bradley, which completely makes sense, even though he hasn't done that well. But the other two, even in hindsight, kind of make you cringe. Trevor Cahill and David Buchanan. Even for an NL only league, it's still cringeworthy. So the only player that went for over a dollar was Clint Robinson, who I kind of went into a long thing about him because he was the only not over or bit over $1 I had to write about. But Clint Robinson, I know he could get some at bats with Jason Worth out, but it seems more likely that Tyler Moore and Michael Taylor are going to pick up most of those bad bats, and Robinson's just going to kind of continue. You'd be more of a bench bat and like once a week starter.
Yeah. It's it's a really, let's face it, it's a really bad week for free agents and on tap.
Yeah, the one thing I want to quickly touch upon, I made three. Well, there's two things I want to touch upon. One is I made three moves, and two of them, one of them was really minor, picking up Jose Lobaton for Tony Cruz. Just because I think he can do a little bit more, and banking on the inevitable Wilson Ramos injury, even though I never root for injuries, it's bad karma. I picked up Eric Young Jr. He's done nothing but kind of as a stash where I can reserve him next week and hope he gets more playing time either with the Braves or with another team if he's cut. And then the third stash is the guy we're just talking about, Stephen Piscotty. I picked him up. I bid six. I got him for one. And the hope there is that I'll reserve him and he'll be up in, 3 to 4 weeks and can actually contribute, a pretty fair amount as an NL-only player.
Yeah, I think for a buck, I think he's a really great stash in NL-only. I think there's a pretty fair chance that he is going to be either up with the club or going to be used as a trade chip in the next month or so. He's just been a AAA for... He's been at AAA for so long now that, you get to a point with these guys where you can't even take their AAA stats seriously anymore. Right. He was at AAA for a full season last year for 136 games, and this year he has another 51 under his belt. So he's played almost 200 games at the AAA level.
Yeah, and he's not super young. I think he's 24. So it's not like, he's a 22-year-old where the mentality is like, well, let's just keep him there for close to a full year. I understand, he's not the perfect player at this point, but in terms of major league readiness, he would be capable at the major league level.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's more, people may look at his stat line in AAA and say, I don't know. He's not doing so well. But the this guy is exactly the kind of the guy you don't want to fall into that trap with. He's a pretty advanced hitter, and he's been at AAA for a long time. So the stats are less important.
So the other point I wanted to make about the NL before moving on is, you know, it was noted at the Masters Ball column last week that I have the most fab. And I reclaimed Hung Jin Ryu because he's clearly out for the year. So I think I now have $13 more than the next team, which means that if somebody comes in from the other league, I'll get to pretty much get that player unless someone trades their fab. So I'm kind of reaching that point where unless somebody, you know, a really high impact player like comes up from the minors unexpectedly, or, you know, if somebody, an injury creates a situation where someone really excellent, you know, kind of gets the opportunity who's on a bench, both these scenarios are very unlikely, it almost pays to wait. And, you know, something else to point out is that with the season ending later this year, a trade deadline, a July 31st trade deadline guy actually will have slightly more impact than he would on a year when the season ended, say, at the end of September.
That's a fair point. The only other thing I want to mention before we move on, Tristan Cockroft picked up Matt Whistler for $1, which I think in an NL-only league, I think is I like the Piscotty pickup a little bit better, but I think it's almost just as slick of a move.
I agree. You know, what's interesting is I talked to Tristan about this on Twitter. Tristan and I are kind of in the opposite boat. Tristan's pitching is excellent. His hitting is really struggling. My hitting has been really strong, and my Clayton Kershaw-led pitching staff has been struggling. We were joking that we're kind of in line to make a trade on June 10th, and this is like about a week ago. But that's kind of exactly it. Like, there's nothing wrong with picking up a guy to fortify something strong if you feel comfortable with your trading skills, with both Tristan and I do.
It'll be really interesting to see how that shakes out.
You know, Brett, I know you're a big fan of the high strikeout middle reliever. Carter Capps got picked up for $1. I think that was one of the more intriguing ones on the list for me this week.
Yeah, he's certainly an intriguing middle reliever, especially in an only format. He's just I can't unpicture his delivery. It's just it's so bad. It's just, if you haven't seen Carter Capps' throwing motion, is particularly in slow motion, it is really worth it. He has just all kinds of strange Jordan Walden-esque extra motion. It's really cool, unless you're his arm.
Yeah, I mean, he's terrifying to watch pitch, but right now he's just blowing away everybody.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, I've always had a thing for Carter Capps.
Yeah, but it's certainly a good strikeout play in the short term for Phil Hertz. So
let's and speaking of Tristan, I noticed he's got Robbie Ray stash on his reserve, so that's fun.
Of course he does.
Yeah, Tristan is like that guy. It's like, who has this guy? It's like, oh yeah, Tristan. So moving on to the AL. I don't know if you listen to the show, Tristan, but if you do, we love you, man. There's nothing personal here. I just, you've won Tout Wars 3 years in a row, and I really want to turn.
Share the love.
Yeah.
Yes.
So moving on to the AL, to kind of, you know, avoid the suspense, the big guy we were talking about was Eduardo Rodriguez. He went for 37, and what's kind of interesting about this is that typically with the victory bidding where it's the second highest bid plus one that wins the player. In this case, two teams bid 37, a third team bid 36. So the winning owner received Rodriguez for 37. So I kind of want to talk a little bit about two things. One, you know, do you guys think that the price on Rodriguez was fair? And two, you know, I understand the point of victory. You know, you kind of bid so that you think, well, you know, my bid will be discounted. Do you think that the winning bidder, you know, if you bid 37, you get him for for 37. Are you disappointed, or do you kind of feel like, well, you know, I don't mind paying that because I think that's what he was worth?
No, I think that bid for Rodriguez probably would have been closer to the 50 to 60 range. I think if you bid 37 on him and you get him for 37 in the AL only, you're happy. And we talked about this offline, you know, earlier in the week and before the show. I think unless I was in a really hamstrung position, if I were in that league, I would have bid more than 37 on Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I think he's got a great shot at sticking in that rotation. He's got a very good chance of putting up a strong whip and strong strikeout numbers. He's very much under the radar right now. In a lot of circles, and part of it is because he's really changed the face of his prospect status over the course of the last year and a half. And, you know, to be fair, a lot of us are a little slow to adjust. I mean, there's been some adjustment made each of the last two seasons. He's been building velocity over the course of each of the last 2 years. He was great in the second half last year. But he was also great in the second half of 2013 and then showed up in 2014 with less velocity in the first half. So, you know, it was a question as to whether that was going to happen again this year, but, you know, he showed up throwing in the mid 90s at the beginning of the season. And that's the step that he needed to take, because when Rodriguez is throwing in the mid 90s, it's a step up from what his prospect status was 2 years ago, which is,
I made this point about him, which is, you know, when he watching him throw that hard, he reminds me of Noah Syndergaard from the standpoint, and I hate comps, but he reminds me from Noah Syndergaard from the standpoint that even if his secondary stuff is not perfect or completely refined, and this is true for Syndergaard, if your fastball is that hard and there's enough explosion on the back end, you can kind of get away with a little less refinement on your secondary stuff and with your third pitch not quite being there. And I think that's what's happened with Rodriguez. He's certainly going to, you know, take his lumps here and there, like Syndergaard did in his last outing against the Padres. But from a fantasy standpoint, even taking his lumps, you know, Syndergaard struck out a bunch of guys. And that's kind of what I see from Rodriguez. I think you're absolutely right. And I've said the same thing, you know, in the industry. You know, we're slow to recognize, and I think more on the fantasy side than on the prospect side at Baseball Prospectus, where we have a lot of good people writing about it. But on the fantasy side, we're kind of slow to recognize when a guy like Rodriguez gets better. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's certainly a takeaway for guys going forward. But you know, it's also an example in a long line of examples. I mean, you can't just go ahead and assume that everybody is the good version of everybody and that guys are going to make a jump, because it really doesn't happen very often. But, you know, Rodriguez is a guy who's been around for a while and has an MO in the fantasy world and in the prospect world that he's been changing slowly. And now I think it's completely blown up. So, I think that's why the bid. I think that's why the bid will leave Rick Wolf and Glenn Colton happy. I really think that the big victory bid would have been much higher than 37 if that was the target.
I don't have all of who has what left in terms of their fab in front of me, but I generally agree, you know, especially because, you know, we're talking about deep mix before and the pitchers available in AL only, you know, and I alluded to this in the NL where Robbie Ray is on a reserve list and all these like guys are on reserve lists. Typically you have in total, like I know this from the NL, in the NL you have like two or three Rockies starters. And Jorge De La Rosa was cut, and I'm considering bidding on him, not super aggressively, but certainly bidding on him because he had a decent outing, and he was dealing with an injury, and he could be productive because his road starts. I think the other guy who's available is like Severino Gonzalez. That's the NL free agent pool, which I know because I'm in Towers NL. The AL's not that different. I think it's like John Banks and like two other guys. So really, the opportunity to get a guy like Rodriguez who could earn in an only like $15 down the stretch, that's a big opportunity. And I think that bidding like 60 or 70, and if you get them for 50, you're kind of like, wow, I spent all that on my budget, but I'm getting a guy who can have that impact, really shouldn't be underestimated.
I completely agree. And I think a similar argument to a less of an extent goes for Chichi Rodriguez, who was the next guy who was bid on, but he got much less play. And I understand why he got a little bit less play. I think there's less upside.
You just made the mistake I usually make. You said Chichi Rodriguez?
Yeah.
Which is the WKRP in Cincinnati reference to Les Nessman saying Chichi Rodriguez.
Yeah.
George probably doesn't know because he's under 30. Nobody listening under 35 will know, but screw you, young people.
I have no idea what you're talking about right now, Mike.
Excellent. Screw you, young people. Die in flames. I don't care.
Sorry, Mike.
You know what I'm talking about, right, Brett?
Yes, I do.
Okay. It looks like my spell check in the article took out one of the chais because it was a duplicate, and I didn't catch that. So, whoops.
Yeah. I did see that. I think I fixed that.
Thanks. But that's an example of, you know, Jeff Erickson of RotoWire being aggressive. He had the other $37 bid. Now, philosophically, I could see why he should have bid more on Rodriguez, but I think his approach was, both these guys could have an impact. I'm going to bid in the 30s for both of them, and I'm going to get one. And the thing about Gonzalez that's damning to me, and I think, Brett, we talked about this offline, 10 teams didn't place a bid. Now, I know there's some teams that have really strong deep pitching, you know, in the league, but I think you bid something, even if it's just 10 to 15, and if you don't get him, you don't get him. I just can't believe that almost everyone in AL Tout Wars decided, no, you know what, I don't even want to bid a dollar on Gonzalez.
Yeah, no, this makes no sense. He's going to get starts, and he's close to a finished product. He's going to be serviceable. I mean, yeah. I've made the comp before. I think his early career from a fantasy standpoint, it can be pretty similar to Mike Leake from a fantasy standpoint. He's that kind of guy. He's not overpowering. He's athletic. He's not going to rack up a ton of strikeouts. But on the other hand, he also possesses upside on top of that. You know, he could be a very good, you know, SP3 in the long run. I don't think he's that this year. And I certainly, even the most optimistic Chichi supporter is not going to think that. But it's there. The talent is there. He needs to get there with all three pitches. But I think he can. I'm very, very bullish on Chichi in the long run,
yeah.
And I'm pretty bullish on this floor in 2015, which is why I think this is a fantastic buy by Jeff Erickson, and you know I also am really surprised that no one else challenged him for him.
I think he definitely plays, and even if he plays as a four or a five. In an only, that's playable in an only. And then that's kind of the point too, which is his floor really isn't that low. He's not somebody, you know, anybody can fail, but he's not likely to fail based on his profile.
Yeah, and he's got a great offense behind him, so he doesn't have to be all that great to get wins. It's a nice floor. It just is. I don't understand really.
I don't either. George, you have anything to add to our Chai discussion?
Not really. I'm surprised.
we're gonna send you that damn episode and you're gonna watch it. You're gonna have homework assignments every week, young man.
Yeah, it's on my to-do list. I'll have a report for you next week. But seriously though, I'm surprised Rodriguez, Eduardo, didn't go for more. I'm with Brett. I'm in that camp that this is a guy where when you just look at the strikeout potential, I mean, I can't imagine why more teams didn't go all in there. And then to not even put in a bid on Gonzalez, I just don't know what some of these teams are looking for when you look at the pitcher available pool in such a shallow league when you look at an only like this. I mean, Gonzalez should have gone for maybe twice that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my thinking. He was a 20 to 25 player in my mind as well. And, you know, in my home league, I didn't get Rodriguez because I've been lower. But, you know, we're dealing with salary caps and things like that and less liberal FAB reclaim rules. We can't reclaim FAB on disabled players. There's just a lot of factors going on in Tout Wars that I don't have in my home league. So if you don't have that, and you have opportunities to get fab back, you don't have to worry about things, you know, of that nature, you should be bidding more aggressively without a doubt.
I completely agree.
Is there anyone else in the AL that we need to talk about? I think it was a pretty light week otherwise. I mean, Jared Dyson going for seven to Larry Schechter with a big, you know, $36 bid, which I think he knew would be reduced on Vickery, is kind of interesting. But, you know, it's a basic speed play bounce back. I don't really see much else to that.
No, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. That's the hammer. You want to talk about the Vickery hammer, that's the hammer.
Yep.
I feel bad for Adam Rosales.
Nah.
Yeah, I don't. He's making major league money, you know. It's
that's true.
I feel bad for the guys in the minors who, you know, are maybe slightly worse than Adam Rosales and never make it.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. Let's shift from fab to trading a little bit. I want to touch on this while we're talking about these. And I know we talked about fab for a little bit longer than I think we planned, but there were definitely some interesting names this week. Mike, I want to throw it out to you here. When you are, I think there's a couple of interesting things. One in redrafts, we'll get to the keeper aspect of it later. But when you're making trades at this time of year, I know we talk about being value focused early on and then eventually shifting into need focused. But where are you right now on that spectrum? And what are the situations where you think it's appropriate to start dealing for need when you see something getting out of control?
I think that, well, it depends on the circumstances, but to me, this is about the time, you know, Memorial Day, maybe early June, this is about the time where I start looking at need as opposed to value. I don't really... You know, like early on, it kind of, you still want to look at value. You want to be careful. And as I pointed out before, you don't want to trade the store away in a situation where, you know, you're getting a need and you're giving up so much. Like if you trade a top hitter for, say, a mid-tier closer or worse because you need saves, you're taking too much value away from your team that, you know, maybe you could get more later. Now is the time, though, where if your offense is, for example, really strong and you have an excess and you see an opportunity to quickly gain 3 or 4 points in saves, this is the point where you might say, well, you know what? I don't really care how much I'm helping my opponent. I see this opportunity to move up without losing too much. You know, there was a good example of this in Tout Wars last week. Guy Foyle of Fake Teams and Lenny Melnick of Roto Experts made a trade where Lenny got Lance Lynn from Ray for Charlie Blackman. Now, I love Charlie Blackman, so maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I really thought from a value perspective that was a good trade for Ray. But looking at the standings, Lenny has an excess in offense overall, and getting Lynn, and particularly those strikeouts from Lynn, really gave Lenny a big boost categorically. And it was a smart move by Lenny. You know, he really identified a need and kind of looked at it like, well, you know, I'm giving up too much in value for Blackman, but I'm filling a need. And I think Lenny might actually wind up gaining more points in that trade than Ray will, particularly as Ray is at the bottom of the pack in steals. And Blackman's going to help him a little bit less than it would help another team.
Yeah, I think that's the same reaction I had. I still think there's a better pitcher that you can get out there for Charlie Blackman, but you know, maybe there isn't. And at some point, especially in an only, you can't sit around and wait for what you think is the perfect deal.
I was going to say that the tough thing in Tout Wars and some of the expert leagues, and we've experienced this in labor, and we could probably do a whole show about this, you know, and I won't mention any names, is that some people, some experts in particular, are always looking to squeeze, you know, every, you know, amount of juice out of that trade orange. That's a horrible analogy. But you're going to lead off with that, aren't you?
That's probably going to be it, yeah.
So that does happen, though. You wind up in a position where you, and this is a nice way to go back to the beginning of the topic, Brett. You wind up in a position where it's not you have to make a trade, but if you stand pat, you're not going to gain anything. And the Lynn Blackman idea is like, well, Lenny's going to gain like 4 or 5 points out of that trade, hypothetically. as opposed to 8 to 10 points he could have gained from a trade that he won't be able to make because an owner's raking him over the coals and wants Blackman plus something else for a pitcher who's slightly better than Lance Lynn.
Yeah, it really depends what you think of Lynn. I think I'm more optimistic on Lynn than most, and to an extent that helps, but to another extent, like you mentioned, it doesn't really matter. I mean, if you in an expert league, if you are trying to get a pitcher from Blackman, you get the pitcher you can get for Blackman. You don't get picky if you need a pitcher, because otherwise you're picking up, you know, Chad Bettis. Or you're picking up Eddie Butler.
Severino
Gonzalez. So pick your poison. You can either get cute with the trade, or you can be subjected to the you know, open cold sore that is the free agent pool.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's definitely, you know, format dependent. In a 12-team mix where there, you know, as we've talked about before, there are more options. You can kind of definitely go back to an owner and say, look, you know, you're offering me Lance Lynn for Blackman. I like Lynn, but I can get somebody on their free agent pool who's not going to be as good as Lynn, but it's going to be close enough to him that I don't feel the need to deal Blackman.
Yeah. So the, you know, this leads into sort of a natural next question in keeper leagues. And we talked a little bit about this before. But what, you know, on right now it's June 4th. If you are at the bottom of the standings on June 4th, is there any reason why you should not be looking to sell now, or is there an advantage to waiting, or have you waited too long?
Well, I mean, this is all league dependent. You know, I don't know what your experience is, Brett, and, you know, Dynasty is different than Roto, which I do Roto. I don't really do Dynasty. There is, in the one home league that I'm left in, nobody is dumped, and part of it is it's a 4x4, so it's closer to begin with. There's a big clump of 11 teams, which is really weird, and there's one team all the way at the bottom that hasn't dumped. You know, and Al, if you're listening to the show, I would dump if I were you, and I'm not even saying I'll get the players that you have, just because you will have 11 teams fighting to get the players that you have, and it's going to be a seller's market. And I think that's a large part of whether or not you should dump. You know, some people say, well, if you're close enough in the standings, you shouldn't do it because you have a chance. But I've seen this before, and I'm sure you've seen this too. I've had teams that have been 10 or 15 points out that have had no chance, and I knew it just because the way the category stacked up, right, and the team was overperforming. I've had teams 25 points out that I knew could win, and I wound up getting close with because I knew the team was underperforming. So I see some people use points out as kind of and time of year as a gauge. Really, a lot of this comes to experience, to knowing your team and knowing your league. If you see an opportunity where, you know, the league is ripe to kind of you or pay you full market value, and you know your team isn't as good as it looks, then dump. If you think you have a chance and think you can maximize the value of some injured players coming back, then stand pat. So it's really league dependent, but I don't think there's a right time. And to your other question, Brett, I do think there is a bit of a domino effect that if you have targets out there, like if there's a team out there that has, say, like, you know, a cheap Mike Trout, which is not really something you're seeing as much anymore, or, you know, Byron Buxton, and you want players like that, and he's the guy you're targeting, you're going to have to do it early, because otherwise you're not going to get the players you're targeting, you know, in a situation if you wait 2 months and you're kind of dealing with second-tier group.
Yeah, this really ties into the difference between a roto keeper and a dynasty in this format. When you dump in a roto keeper, you can, you know, you have a pretty good chance, and you have quite a good chance of being competitive the following season. When you dump in a dynasty, you are making a real decision. You're making decision to go into the darkness. And, you know, you, as an owner in a dynasty league, I think the thing that you need to keep in mind is that it's not always a good idea to go into that darkness, even if you don't have a very good team. There are plenty of ways that you can do a partial rebuild in that sort of format, where you can trade off some pieces but keep others and supplement, and then just keep kind of churning. And that's, you know, that's where you can take advantage in both formats. When you dump early and you have roster spots open, the constant churning of bringing in new guys and hoping somebody sticks at a cheap price or someone who is above the keep line in your league, that's where you can really make up a good amount of value without giving up much. You don't want to go in a dynasty format when you're not entirely sure what your next, you know, 2 or 3 years is going to look like. You don't want to start selling off all your major league players for prospects, because then you know you won't win in the next 2 or 3 years. And that's, you know, sometimes it's necessary, but it's often not very fun.
The one thing I would add in Roto is that the league I'm in has a salary cap, and it creates a situation. And if you're in cap leagues, you'll see this, where there's still dumping, but it's kind of limited. And a big mistake I see is teams trading players, like elite players at par, who they should probably keep, and not getting enough back. So, like, let's say it's a situation where, you know, Miguel Cabrera is at like a $35 salary in a $260 league, and you trade Cabrera and you trade a second player who, you know, isn't a keep, and the guy you get back is somebody good, but it's just not enough value to get back in your trade. So you wind up in a situation where Cabrera, actually, with inflation, and I know I'm kind of really getting into some esoteric stuff here, but he just winds up being the better keep than the dump chip you got. And that's really where you have to be careful. You definitely want to make sure – I'm not saying not to trade Cabrera, and obviously you have to trade guys like that to get the chips you want, but you have to make sure that the chips you're getting back are going to be worth it. There's always risk in a dump trade, of course, that they won't. But I've seen this cycle, even in Roto, you know, I love that term about going to the darkness, Brett. I've seen teams go into that darkness where, you know, I my old blog, I used to call this, you know, Joseph Stalin, the owner who always had the 5-year plan, who always I hope you get that reference, George, and if you don't, then we need to send you back to college.
No, I got that one. We're good.
Oh, good.
We're good. So I picked some things up along the way, Mike.
Okay. Wow. Look. We're each other. We're going to be friends, aren't we? So, I mean, I've seen teams like that where, you know, I made this analogy a couple of years ago. You know, there was a team that wouldn't trade like Chesler Cuthbert in a Roto for Paul Konerko, and it's kind of that idea, and this is when Cuthbert was still like a pretty good prospect, but to me it's kind of the idea of like, well, Cuthbert's in high A ball, he could be anything. Paul Konerko in a Roto, you know, at the point where he's still producing, is still going to be a pretty decent player. Like, I'd make that trade without blinking in a rotisserie format. And I think that's a mistake people kind of make too. It's like, if you're going for it, you know, you kind of have to go for it and trade, you know, those lesser minor league chips like that, not worry about it. And if you're dumping, you really need to make sure that the guys you get aren't just a bunch of wings and prayers, because if you do that, odds are very good that your best case scenario is you're going to finish sixth or seventh the next year.
I think it's important to remember, too, if you're one of many teams that are dumping, you're only helping the strong teams in your league get better. So the big fish are getting bigger. It's just going to take you longer to get out of the darkness.
That's a really good point. I think now the into the darkness thing is going to be our tactics on it.
Oh, but it's, I feel like that was the theme of our 2014 labor team, though.
Oh, God. We should have a separate podcast where we make George miserable about our labor team.
I still feel bad for Jose. That was a rough year for you guys.
It was.
We agreed never to talk about this.
Yeah.
Agreed. So, let's do that.
Yeah. So with that, we are going to take a quick break and then come back and finish things off.
Mm-hmm.
for listening to episode 56 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. Read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Go there now. There's lots of good stuff. Subscribe, become a premium member, get access to all of our fantasy content, prospect content, all of our great national content. And then if you want to splurge and be a super premium member, you get access to the Bat Signal, which is our fantasy answering service, where you send us a question and we send you an answer generally within about 12 hours. George has now seen the inner workings of this. It's frightening, but it is helpful, and we complain about it, but we enjoy it. Again, a reminder, if you enjoy playing Daily Fantasy, or even if you just enjoy being around us, we have a Daily Baseball Prospectus private DraftKings game that you will see all of us tweet out. You can also get the link at baseballprospectus.com. Come play with us. We're admittedly all not very good at DFS because we're all a little bit more long-term focused, but it's fun nonetheless. So
get my clock clean. There doesn't seem to be any middle ground.
That's true. Come and take our money. That should be the theme of the game. Come and take our money. Anyway, well, actually, speaking of that, I am in the money right now. Look at this. I'm in fourth place. I'm just not going to check it the rest of the night and assume that it ends that way. Email us, flagsflyforeverbaseballperspectives.com. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye, guys.